If you enjoy our original content, please consider becoming a supporter on Anchor so that we can continue to bring you laughs every week.
The following program may contain immature situations, themes, and is intended for an adult audience. The opinions expressed here do not necessarily reflect the views of everyone else working on the show. Viewer discretion is advised.
All right. Welcome to the Danny McDermott Show. And we're kicking this week's show off with a technical glitch. So I think here's Danny.
Hey. How's it going, guys? I was trying to get these headphones to work, but they are not working. Welcome to the Danny McDermott Show. How you doing, Kevin?
I think that should be the show's new beginning.
I don't know, Kevin. I'm a mess.
That's all right. I felt like I gave you a sweet introduction. That's what.
I mean, what do you expect me to be? It's National Chardonnay Day. Of course I'm going to be a wreck. National Chardonnay Day, which is for housewives who want to be junkies, but don't want the stigma of that meth, you know, thing. So it's a lot of national holidays today. We have a National Paper Airplane Day.
Sweet.
The airspace is generally pretty clear. You know, it was generally pretty clear when there were only paper helicopters, you know, and paper airplanes, you know. Only the most adventurous take paper airplanes, though, because, you know, they pretty much go wherever the wind takes them and they always crash. So they just pray there's no smokers in the flight. No laugh at all.
If you're going to take a paper airplane, that's guaranteed to crash. Fuck it. Smoke, drink, whatever you're into.
They have extensive pat downs and shoe removal, but somehow smokers find a way to sneak shit on.
Hey, I'm a member.
That has to be one of the dumbest jokes we've ever written.
I'm a member of the 4 Foot High Club, I'll have you know. I'm not. It doesn't exist.
All right. Let's just move on.
All right.
It's National Senior Health and Fitness Day. The senior triathlon involves yoga bowel movements, lucid dreaming naps where they can actually do push-ups, and a lecture about how much better the world was in 1964, which now we have no argument against.
No, we don't. And I did downward facing turd earlier today. Don't encourage that.
It's also World Lindy Hop Day, which I don't know what the real thing is for that. National Lindy Hop Day, which is how the seniors can show their health and fitness, or maybe will be my hip regrets that hop day. I don't know, Kevin. We're really reaching here.
It's late in the season.
The Lindy Hop, wasn't that the jitterbug, actually?
Or the Hucklebuck. They gave them better names. They gave dances better names back in the day.
Right. Well, it's National World Otter Day, which is kind of cool. When I was a kid, I did a report on otters. I loved otters. They're the cutest things, aren't they? I think we have an otter on video here. Give me some
food. You won't believe.
Delicious. I want food or I'm going to kill someone.
This is tasty.
They know it's my voice.
I'll take a bowl.
Look at that little cutie. Look at him. It's like he was trained to eat with his mouth open and look at the camera.
He
looked a little psychotic, I gotta admit.
Yeah, you have to think the otter thinks he's training the people. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to the opposite. Oh, we get them to eat. Every fucking creature that's ever existed is programmed to eat. You're not getting them to do anything, pal.
Otters are smart, man. Otters are smart. All right. So they are. They're smarter than most Americans. Let's be honest. all right. We're not going to get into politics or any of that crap.
That was not true in 1964, Danny. That was totally false in 1964.
All right. I'm extremely happy to have this our first guest on tonight. This guy's been a friend of mine for 5 or more years now. He basically built his whole studio, Everrocks Records. And he's also the drummer from the band Robot Nature. Please welcome Jesse Shaddis. Yeah.
Hey guys, how you doing?
How awesome. You doing, brother?
Good, man. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
you want to tell the story how we met, or should I?
Oh yeah, you know what? Go ahead and do that because that's a little cloudy, to be honest with you.
All right, I'll tell you.
It was National Zinfandel Day, and nobody really remembers.
It might have been.
So what happened? What happened? Was there was a the Burbank Music Academy was holding an event with bands, and it's funny because the our next guest was the guy that was running that event, believe it or not, and I just realized it just now. How crazy is that? That's crazy that you guys are on the same show.
Burbank Music Academy.
Yeah, no, not him. Okay. The guy who's running the event, David Lockhart, but we're going to have him on in a minute.
That's right.
So what happened was, I was the comedian that they asked to, I was doing it for free, and I was bringing the bands up, doing jokes and all this kind of stuff. And I brought your band up, and you guys killed it, Robot Nature. And then I went to the bar, and after your set, you came up to me at the bar and said, "Dude, you're funny." And I go, "Really?" Because I felt like it sucked.
Yeah, no, I know. It was funny. It was funny, and you got a New York style sense of humor, which is really cool. And I'm a Cali boy. I was born and raised a Cali boy. But you know, my parents are from New York, so I definitely got the humor, and I don't think everyone did, but I definitely did. So I was like, okay, I get this guy. He's pretty funny.
Well, the thing was, it wasn't set up for a comedy show because they were set up for music. And so everybody was standing. Nobody was sitting. They were all talking and stuff. And people were coming in and out with their equipment. But you came up to me. You're like, "Dude, I want to record you for free because I love your jokes." And that's how we became friends. I went to your studio and we spent hours recording and stuff. That's how we met. And it was David Lockhart's show, who's going to be on later on. So.
Awesome.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Can't wait to see him again.
Very cool story.
So let's talk about how you started in music and in how about your studio? Let's talk about your studio, Everrock Studios.
Okay, so the label's Everrock Records, and it is a recording facility. I've been in business about 20 years now, and that really went fast. I remember I was just 19 years old with some hand-me-down equipment and making music because I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And later on, I found out that people were willing to pay for it. So I built it and they came. And it's been doing pretty well. I was able to buy a home. At least it's small, humble home, town home, and build another big studio here and have a rotating client base. And it's been a blessing and it just came naturally. And I think most of my clients kind of sense that. I didn't do it for monetary compensation, and now it does provide monetary compensation, but it didn't, that wasn't the reason. The reason was because I was passionate and it was in my heart. It was the reason I was waking up in the morning. It's still the reason I wake up in the morning. So, and so I'm here in Los Angeles, right here in the San Fernando Valley, and things are going well. And, it's it all derived from passion and music and all that. So things are cool. It's a self-sustaining passion, if you will. It's what do you call it? Sustainable.
unlike what me and Kevin do.
What's your favorite part of the process?
Favorite part of the process is definitely when I have clients in here that I have a vested interest in that actually come across challenges and they're like, I don't know what to do here in the chorus, or it feels like it's missing something. It needs piano, it needs orchestration, some strings, it needs percussion. And they really look into me for some answers or some solutions. And I get to put that in there. And then I see everyone's face and everyone's joyous and the record sounds better. And they're like, okay, let's print that. And it's kind of cool. It's kind of rewarding because not only are they taking care of you for your time and your knowledge, but when they actually need your musical input on it to really enhance the record, I think that's one of the most rewarding things, because you walk away with a couple of dollars in your pocket most of the time. And then, and you walk away with the client happy and actually a really good record that you're putting out. There's something you could stand behind. So I'd say, you know, like my creative input is the most rewarding part of this, definitely.
Very cool.
So you've been doing that a long time. You're actually getting into scoring some projects as well.
Trying. Yeah, I have a couple scores that I've written for small B films, some Sunset Music Festival type stuff, 20-minute reels, 15-minute little mini series things, and some other small films I can't disclose at the moment because they're just not appropriate. But yeah, people are buying scores and doing some scores.
Wait, it's not appropriate? What is it? What is it, porn? It's not appropriate, you said. What is it, porn?
have you watched the show, Danny? Porn is the most appropriate thing.
You know, I can't disclose that information at this time.
not at liberty to discuss.
It's you know, you'll have to speak to my lawyer about this.
No, your lawyer's in it, isn't he? he's the lead.
It's possible. I don't even know what you're talking. I don't know what you're talking about.
Next I've up. Seen Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. His lawyer brought the acid.
Yeah. The best lawyer.
I'd hire him. I would definitely hire him.
Yeah, no, it's cool. So, yeah, I'm trying to break into scoring, so. Hopefully I can reach some people. I'd like to do some original stuff, or at least get some more films in my hand, some timelines and some footage that I can score to.
You're extremely talented. I've been in the studio on rare occasions where you were recording artists and stuff. And plus you were showing me, you were going through ideas for my movie for some of the scenes and some of the music that you came up with. I thought was brilliant. It's amazing how you so quickly bring music together, and you have a good sense of what will work for what scene. So I'm hoping that I'm going to be definitely, you know, I introduced you to one of my producers, and hopefully we'll get you doing a lot more film this year. So I'm excited about that.
I'd like to grab some of the old material, some of the older material. I know it's a couple years old now, but I'd like to grab some of the older material and maybe line it up with some of the newer material, because I know the audio is quality. So if we put some new stuff, grab some new material, I'd like to put out an actual full current album, because I know a lot of stuff you did, you were trying to bring some of this stuff that's never been broadcasted, sold, or downloadable, if you will, to the masses or to the internet. Whenever you're ready, I would like to go and do that. When you have some new material to compile, we can take the old stuff, or we can just start from scratch. It's really quite enjoyable to record comedy, because you just sit here and, you know, with the air conditioning on and drink wine and listen to a comedian in your isolation booth just crack jokes. I mean, and how enjoyable is that? Like, you just sit there and it's like, okay, when it's all done, you're just like, okay, chop it up a little bit and then put it out. But you're literally getting paid or investing into something while you're laughing the whole way. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, whenever you're ready, that would be awesome.
I will do it again. Definitely.
Yeah.
I got a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about after the show, but, okay. Now let's talk about your band.
Okay.
Robot Nature. I was blown away when I saw you guys live, man. You guys are flawless live. You sound as good as a studio recording when you're live. Do you have a sound person that goes with you guys, or how do you?
We've been trying to do that. Unfortunately, they cost a lot of money to have one of those guys, and those guys are usually kind of busy. So it does cost a significant amount of money. And unfortunately, at the moment, we are not at the point where we can be paying, you know, thousands of dollars a month to have one specific guy dedicated to the group. But that is in the works as we speak. And we do have people that do volunteer their time and do get paid when we have big shows that know exactly how we're supposed to sound, that have been in the studio with us, recorded records with us, even played on some of the records and added some additional instruments, that know what the band's supposed to sound like from the crowd's point of view instead of on the stage point of view, if you will. And so we do get that. We do have that. But as you know, it'd be ideal to make sure that every single show sounded, what's the word I'm looking for? It sounded, you know, like
studio.
Consistent. The sound would be consistent at every show.
Right.
That makes sense. So you hear us in Atlanta, Georgia, we sound one way. You hear us on the record, we sound it the same way. You hear us on the radio, we sound the same way. You hear us at the Troubadour right here in Los Angeles, we sound the same way. And unfortunately, sometimes we'll get some underpaid, disgruntled workers that really don't give a crap about the bands because they've seen 10 bands a night and they're getting paid crap. And they just, is your mic working cool? Good luck, guys. And we're like, really? So sometimes it happens, and sometimes we get really lucky, and sometimes we have the budget to take care of some great things, and we have some really good things in the works right now. So, we try. We've all been playing a very long time. We were lucky that we're still very young, but we have a lot of years behind us as well to get a really quality sound, and I'm excited about my future, and especially for the band too. So,
what is the philosophy behind the name Robot Nature?
There's human nature, and then there's the future, and robots and AI and autonomy and all that is taking over the world. And then there's robot nature. So if you would look, so basically human nature and robotic autonomy and AI kind of come together in like 2057, 2033, if you will, something like that. And then there's a whole story behind it where it's really quite detailed, and it's actually a really cool concept. I would rather have my lead singer in here to kind of bring the detail to it. You see him in the front here on this picture. He's a extremely talented multi-instrumentalist. And
Deepak.
He plays guitar, he plays piano, he produces like me, and he plays violin. And a bunch of other instruments as well, sitar and a bunch of other Indian cultural instruments. And sometimes we implement that as well. He's a singer and a songwriter. He's got an amazing pitch, an amazing voice, and he's a great performer. And we're really happy to be working with him. He's happy to be working with us. We got a lot of cool things in the works. And it's really cool. It's really, really cool. So it's kind of a culmination. But if I wanted to go into the story, sorry to answer your question, into the actual detail of it, I would definitely have to bring him in, since he was the first person to create this robotic fictional AI humanoid type of world together. So we got some cool things coming out for the performances, where it's going to be like very futuristic and lots of neon and electronics and robots on stage with us. It's going to be badass. We're excited. So
yeah, you guys have a unique sound for sure. And you've got tons of fans. I mean, every time I go to a show, you're packed with all these fans that must feel pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. It's always good to have a good turnout, you know, especially when you're younger, you kind of bomb a lot. But now it's like, we don't have very many shows, but the shows we do, we make sure they're quality, and we make sure that our fans that show up get a good show, get a good stage, get a good sound, and then we don't do them too much so that we can bring all our crowds back out. I think quality is better than quantity, you know, especially nowadays, and you can do everything on the internet, and you can do virtual shows and things of that nature. You know, you can just do one good show a month so that the people couldn't make it last month can come this month, but you'll still have at least a couple hundred people coming out to each show. So
let's talk about Burning Man. When you guys did Burning Man,
that was awesome. That was really awesome. I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get to do it last year because of quarantine, but I guess it makes sense because, you know, you don't want that many people rubbing elbows and breathing on each other for whatever that's worth. Makes sense. But we did entertain the virtual Burning Man, which was, yeah, it just wasn't
Burning Man. Well, you did the real Burning Man.
But we're on the team, and we support their efforts. So, you know, hopefully, because we did the real Burning Man and the virtual Burning Man, we will be invited to the next Burning Man, the actual real one, back in in the Black Desert, Black City Desert. So.
And you opened up for Alan Parsons the first time you did it, right?
Correct. We opened up for Alan Parsons Project, and I didn't really feel like setting up my drums, and he had a big, huge, beautiful drum set up on stage, and I said, "Hey, Alan, I need to talk to your drummer." He's like, "He's over there, man, tent over there. Check him out." I said, "Hey, Alan, drummer, can I talk to you for a minute, man?"
That's how you called him.
Yeah, but I didn't know his name, and I still don't remember his name. It was Burning Man, so it was a little cloudy.
Okay.
But no, he was super cool. The whole band was super cool. And he goes, "Man, go ahead and rock my drums, man." He had a gorgeous drum set. I said, "I'm going to make some small adjustments." He said, "Go ahead and rock the drums." So I got to play our whole set for like an hour and 15 minutes with my band Robot Nature on Alan Parsons' drummer's drum set. And it was pretty awesome. Really cool. It was really cool. Quite an experience looking at it, like 70,000 people on the playa. It was just, everyone's wearing lights and there's all kinds of things going on, man. It was phenomenal. It was quite an experience.
Did you adapt any of your playing to his setup?
Did I adapt any of my playing to his setup? No, not really. But, you know, the way it works is sometimes, you know, a drummer's got their stuff set up, you will play slightly different, change your fills a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, technically, yes, I did some of the fills and some of the articulations I would do normally in drumming did probably come out in the actual set of the songs due to the setup. You can't accomplish certain things with someone else's setup, but you can accomplish other things with someone else's setup. So, yeah, I did. Yeah, good question, actually. Yeah.
Thank nice, you. Kevin.
Yeah, that threw me for a loop, but that was pretty good.
So who else is in there? Let's talk about the other members of the band.
So we have myself, Jesse Shattis, the drummer, and I do some of the co-production with them. We write a lot of electronic stuff here in my studio, in Deepak's studio. And then we have Richard Pariser, who is another amazing player. He's the keyboardist. He's running the backing tracks. He's running a laptop. He's running the sound effects. He's running two different keyboards that running two different things. He's got his hands on two separate keyboards playing two different sounds at times while listening to clicks in his ears. It's all, we're all over the place. And then we have a bass player. His name's Connor at the moment. We are currently struggling a little bit with landing a solid bass player. But we have a good prospect right now, so we're really excited. We just did a show in Ventura last week, and everything sounded really good, and he looked great on stage, and he's got a good vibes, and he's very interested in the group. So, and then, but the last player was Mikey Sklena, and he is no longer. He moved on to other things that were more of interest to him, if you will. And then there's a lead singer, Deepak, and he goes by the other Deepak, and like I said, he's a multi-instrumentalist. He's extremely talented. He's responsible for a lot of the writing as well, and a lot of the ideas, and then and together we're just it clicked, and things have been going really, really well for us. We've been moving fast, really forward. In 2.5 years, we've gotten further than any of my other bands or any of my other projects have ever gotten in that short of time. I mean, where I'm at now with this and where everyone's at with this band as far as the LLC, bank accounts, what we're able to monetize, the crowds and the people we're able to influence, our social media influence, in 2.5 years has been exponential. So it's pretty quite awesome, man. I think it's a chemistry. It's like a marriage, you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And this is working out. So
what are your stuff coming up, or what's for the band?
Yeah, we got about 8 new songs that are coming out, but they are not out. Of course, we're keeping them under wraps, stuff that we've been doing during quarantine. And, you know, I'm sure you can imagine the shows and rehearsals have been minimal. During the last year of 2021, but we've been able to write and put stuff together virtually and through Zoom meetings and share each other's ideas and build on them. So we got a lot of cool stuff in the works. And the past 4 or 5 weeks, we've been actually rehearsing and putting all those ideas into reality and making them a real thing. And we're excited. I can't disclose that information at this time, Danny McDermott.
But it sounds to me like what you're describing is that if you guys had been a band earlier in your career without the experience and years under your belt, you might not have been able to do as much progress during the quarantine. It sounds like you made good use of a difficult time.
Yeah, we were able to nurture the records and do things because, you know, there's 50% of when you create music, whether it's when you just do production like I do here in my studio or when you do production with a band and you create songs of any sort, whether you're a solo artist, a producer or a band, the other 50% of it is putting the record out. and getting people to listen to it, because people just want to jump to the next song all the time. And that's the problem. Everyone's in a hurry to put out music no one's waiting for. Everyone's like, I got to get my album out by August. Got to get it out. I promised myself I'd get it out by August. Like, come on, we got to meet the deadline. And I'm like, dude, no one's waiting for your music to come out. Like, no one's sitting around waiting going, man, I can't wait for Robot Nature to bring out this album right away. We never told you a date when it's going to come out. You'll know when it's coming out. And people are such in a hurry to put out music that no one's waiting for. So, I think we're able to nurture some of the records, push them out there, put them in people's hands during the quarantine, and actually nurture the records and talk about them and do interviews and do Zoom calls and put them in chat groups and chat rooms, things you should be doing anyways. But because you're so busy rehearsing and going to shows and, you know, shaking hands, rubbing elbows and hugging babies all the time, you forget to actually stop and nurture. Now the record's made. Now push the record. It's time to push the record instead of just focusing on making another one, because then you end up with a pile of records that no one's pushing and it can get lost in the shuffle, you know?
Wow. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
So
it's a double-edged sword. It's really cool, but it's also it also can affect your entire career if you don't push the records too. I mean, I kind of, in many ways, I don't want the whole quarantine and the slowdown thing and people to take care of their stuff to stop. But at the same time, I want to get back to the activity and momentum of life. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, Kevin and I, we always try to, you know, like for you guys, you're in a band. It's easy to find, women to date for you guys because they're there every show.
this is 100% correct.
So Kevin and I would like to join your band.
These are facts. So we actually were looking for a tambourine player.
I'm limited on the tambourine.
Okay. So Danny, you're on tambourine, and you, my friend, are on cowbell.
Oh, that's my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Hey, so I'm just like you. I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like you. The only difference is when I do it, I make gold records. Now give me some cowbell. More cowbell. I got a fever. And the only
difference is cowbell.
I'm the type of guy that would bring the cow in the studio to make it more authentic.
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying? Genuine cowbell, not just some nonsensical thing. The cow and the bell.
Wow.
And then you got to chase the cow around the studio to make him ring the bell.
Yeah. That's fine. That's the cow knows what it's doing.
Well, Kevin and I have found it, since we don't have a band, we found a more unique way. We're going to try out to meet women. And it's called Tinder Trailers. I can we play this right now and see how it looks? Let's see how it looks.
Oy vey.
Tim is a very eligible bachelor. When he meets someone special, he really gives them his all. Tim volunteers with the seniors and the homeless. Tim both lifts and lowers the toilet seat and totally won't try to bang your sister. Tim is an executive vice president with a pension, good insurance, which includes dental and vision. Tim gets along with his ex-girlfriends, and there's only one he would leave you for. Tim would prefer I not say that, so scratch that. I never said it. Tim's parents have passed away, so he never has to go visit anyone. He's on his 9th year of therapy, so he has worked on most of his bullshit, and he really loves to listen. So all that shit that happened during your day, that has a place in his heart. Tim also has no balls, so he will take all of the toxicity that dysfunctional pack of sea urchins you call a family can dish out.
That's ridiculous.
The music was perfect.
That's great. That should be one of those for podcasts. You should do more segments like that, like some more like dumb, funny, you know, off the whim, like sketch comedy type stuff like that. That stuff's fun. You had me over here dying. Good thing they muted my microphone. You're cracking up.
That's great. We've actually been.
You muted my microphone. I thought I was coming through. I was over here dying. And it's a good thing they changed your name.
Yeah, well, I was acting. That's my acting.
50% of that is you. But all the good stuff. All the good stuff.
Thank you, buddy. So, you know what? I think I'm going to have you stay on the whole show if you want, because the next guest we're bringing on, you know him, and I know him, and why not?
Okay.
I'm okay with that. I think he's in the green room. I hope he's in the green room.
He's not in the green room.
He's not in the green room.
I'm going to come out of frame for just 1 second. I'll be right back.
Wait. You can't go because he's not here yet.
I was going to scoot over and turn off this lamp. But
you're our only guest right now.
There's an element of hostage taking in the Danny McDermott show this week. So if someone meets our demands, then you can go. But until then.
Are we not? What happened to David? I thought he was in the green room.
I think he is in the green room now.
Oh, he is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a first for the show,
right?
So, Kevin, all right, Kevin Fitz.
Yes,
is that your real last name?
It's Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald.
Yes,
okay, because I'm a big fan of Fitz and the Tantrums, and I was wondering if you had anything to do with him or their people.
No, in fact, if I did, they wouldn't be any good.
Oh man,
I yeah.
At least you're honest.
All right. Our next guest, let's bring up the banner here. Our next guest is an Emmy Award-winning producer and the 2018 American Martial Arts Hall of Fame Star of the Year. Please welcome David Lockhart.
Wow. Thank you. That sounded cool.
Welcome. How you doing, brother?
You made me sound cooler than I am. I'm good. I'm happy to be here. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I was just saying how the reason I met Jesse was because of you. Because if you booked me to be the comedian for those bands that night at the Burbank Music Academy.
So
all those bands?
Yeah.
Artist Palooza or whatever it was?
Who's Jesse? Jesse who?
From Robot Nature.
I think so. That is me. What's going on, David?
Hey, what's up, Jesse? Sorry, this phone. Sorry, I'm on this. I was going to be on a computer. Jesse, Robot Nature, that's how you met? Artist Palooza? Yes.
It's all coming together now.
Are you guys seeing four of us like the Brady Bunch? Is that how this works?
Pretty much. Yes.
So you're over, Jesse?
Pretty much.
That's awesome. That's okay.
I'm looking up at Kevin right now, and I'm looking up at Daniel right now.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Never look up at Kevin when you're underneath.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
How you doing, Jesse?
I'm good, David. I'm good. How are you? Good?
Yeah.
We actually got an interesting post from an interesting somebody on social media. I haven't heard from her in some time. I've DJed a couple of her events. She's actually a pretty decent singer. She's got some clout, got a big fan base. I can't disclose that information who she is right now, but later on we could talk about it if you want. But we got a really nice post saying, I love you both. And she mentioned me, and then she mentioned you in the post as well. She's like, I love you guys both. And I'm like, okay, that's awesome. I liked it. Threw a thumbs up. But I was like, that's funny because I'm with David Lockhart now. You want to comment on my post, but the past 2 years I've never heard a damn thing. Thanks, David, though.
Was it
now she's back in my circle.
Madonna, was it?
Yeah. I'm sure it wasn't me.
So David, you were just in the New York the LA Times, I should say. For your film.
Yes. That was from Lockhart One. So they're covering, that's when they covered Lockhart One, but we're shooting Lockhart Two now. And yeah, there it is, or one of these squares. And Yeah, so I've been working on this one for a few years. Lockhart 1 came out a few years ago. And Lockhart 2, the craziness continues about my last name and this healing stone and the Crusades and Robert the Bruce. And I could, is this a 2-hour show? What's it? You want me to give the elevator pitch? Or...
Yeah, let's tell the fans what it's about.
It's martial arts.
I don't want to talk the whole time.
So I found out where my last name came from, Lockhart. And it came from Robert the Bruce, King of the Scots in 1333, when he was the man who got England its independence. In Braveheart, he was a guy that betrays Mel Gibson. But later on, he becomes good, and he frees Scotland. And when he was passing, he summoned his two main knights to the chamber and says, "When I die, I want you to bury my heart in the Holy Land." So he dies. This is a true story, as true as I know. So he dies, and then his two main guys, James Douglas and Sir Simon of Lee, they cut out his heart and they put it in a locket. And James Douglas wears the locket, and Sir Simon of Lee wears the only key that could open the locket. And Sir Simon of Lee becomes Sir Lockhart after this expedition. They take 30 knights. They sail from Scotland to Spain on the way to the Holy Land. While they're in Spain, the King of Spain says, King Alfonso says, "Hey, while you're here, can you help me fight this battle? The Moors have taken over this castle." So the Scots say, "Yes, we will." They get ambushed. James Douglas dies, loses the heart. Four knights survive, including Simon Lockhart, goes on a commando mission, rescues the heart, but also gets this healing stone in the throne room. And they abort the Holy Land. They go back to Scotland. They bury the heart at Dunsmuir Abbey, and the Lockharts keep the healing stone from generation to generation. And it's called the Lee Penny. So that's all true. And then I made up a story where I get a letter from my dead grandfather that says, "You must open up the heart. The world depends on you, buried under the golf course." So you got a little Goonies. You got some Raiders of the Lost Ark, Matrix. I find it, and on it is an algorithm. Oh, a real story too. My grandfather was a pro golfer. Back to the fake story. There's an algorithm that could provide the world with free and limited energy. And the powers that be want to stop this, and you know, we got to save the world, all that kind of fun stuff. So that was the first one. So I made the first one. You can watch the first one on Amazon. And the second one, when I first made the first one, I didn't know anything about. Like I saw it online. I read some dusty pages. You know, my computer was dusty. But since then, I really traveled to all the places and. Like I went to the festival. They have a festival celebrating the battle. I'm like, what? I thought like 10 people knew about this battle, but like they treated me like this long lost prince and all this crazy stuff. So yeah, there's more to that, but I'll stop there for...
No, this is an episode. Nobody discloses anything on this episode. That's the rule.
Okay, good.
Apparently these guys are both agents of the FBI or something.
No, it's good. We got people doing things. So many... That's part of the beast. They can't talk about it.
Now, listen, aside from that, though, you've been a producer a while now, and you produced a movie with a certain actor that my father is a huge fan of from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Ed Asner.
And I got to meet
him through you.
Oh, cool. I should be getting 10% of all your contacts. You're meeting everybody.
Right?
Never happens. I don't know if you're making money off of these guys, but I want my 10%.
No, but seriously, you've been such a good friend. I mean, you really have been helping me try to get my movie made, and you've been a great friend. And so but anyway, let's talk about this movie. Senior Entourage
just came out last week and stars Ed Asner, eight Emmy Award winner, legendary Ed Asner. From the kids might know him from Up, you know, the balloon guy. And Elf, maybe the teenagers know him, the millennials or someone might know him from Elf, Santa Claus.
He was Santa Claus.
And other people, he's also in Cobra Kai. He plays Johnny's dad in Cobra Kai, you know. So he's still fighting the fight, you know. He's still doing his thing. and he's amazing. I'm actually in a movie with him right now. I'm on set with a movie with Ed Asner right now, and Dan Laurie from Wonder Years. I'm not producing this one. I think Brian Connors, who directed Senior Entourage, I think he's having me on set and giving me a part. Hopefully, he's hoping I can get more money for him or something like that. He doesn't know I'm broke, so I'll go until we get the money back from Senior Entourage. No, but now it's out. So you can watch Senior Entourage on Amazon, and supposedly it's in Walmart, although no one's been able to find it in the Walmart. And yeah,
wait, Jamie Lee Curtis is in this?
Jamie Lee Curtis is in it, yes. Jamie Lee Curtis. So,
what?
I mean, her part isn't as, her part is like as big as my part in the movie, but she is in it, and she's the Women's March. We shot at the Women's March, and actually, I wasn't even there. Like, so Helen Reddy, you know, I'm a Woman, Hear Me Roar. She was in the movie, and then I went to Sundance with Mark Rydell to film Senior Entourage. Helen Reddy stayed home, but the whole Women's March thing was happening, and my wife was going to the Women's March. I was like, oh, you should take Helen Reddy with you. She's, you know, famous Iron Woman, you know, they'll dig it. And so they did. Kim's like, all right. So I was like, here's her number, call her up, take her to the march. And then I thought, maybe people will like it, take some selfies of them, whatever. I look online and there's Helen singing the song with, I don't know, a million women strong and men were in there too. Singing I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. I was like, oh my God. And so that was like, and Helen, you know, passed away a couple months ago. So that was her.
I hadn't even heard that.
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of sudden, but, you know, not, I knew she was having some health issues. But she, I mean, to be it at part of when she, you know, bookended, you know, the end, she hadn't sung actually in public for a couple years until that moment. So I'm happy that I got to be like, help her send her off in some awesome, you know, singing to the masses and, you know, people loving on her. And so when they heard Helen Reddy was there, they called up the stage and said, yeah, we're here at the march. I'm with Helen Reddy. They're like, oh, you're with Helen Reddy? We've been trying to contact her. Yeah, bring her backstage, get on. And Jamie Lee Curtis was supposed to do a speech. When Jamie Lee Curtis heard that Helen Reddy was there, he was like, screw that, I ain't doing my speech. I'll give away my time and have Helen come on. And so, yeah, so she was sort of like, she was like Helen's like main supporter, you know, like, you know, helped her like on stage, gave her motivation, like getting the crowd all worked up. And so that was Jamie Lee Curtis's part in that. And then she said that was the highlight of her life, Jamie Lee Curtis did. And
That was
a cool thing that I wasn't even there. I was in Sundance, which turned in my thing turned into like a terrible situation. Like Mark couldn't go out because it was too anyways. So at least that happened at the same time. And yeah, God bless Helen. And she was spunky. She would hit on me. Like she would really, she would, like, I would have gone for it too, but you know, the guy was her, what they call
well,
her.
And
her
your
her
wife.
Wouldn't let me. And my wife. My wife might've been okay. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, yeah. About that.
She did hit on me, though. She was, like, spunky. She was like, ooh, hey, you know. Like, me on my back, my bottom every time I walked by. Different rules back then. They, you know, they were able to get away with, you know, I think when you reach a certain age, you're still able to get away.
That was the social contract when I was a kid. A 70-year-old could get away with just about anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's good to hear that it's...
It's kind of I feel bad for some people in their 70s and 80s who were raised in that generation, and now people are trying to hold them accountable, but they're at an age where you can't change that much, you know what I mean, some of these people. And you know, they're still trying to be flirty and like they were back when they were young. They're harmless, you know what I mean, but I don't know.
It's medically ill-advised for them to twerk. They got to kick it to you somehow.
I've seen that try, though.
You leave my mom out of this.
How'd you break your hip? Twerking accident.
Dave, there go for it.
So you have met my mom, Danny.
Well,
you know, I love your mom. She's a sweet woman.
It's a hard adaptation because very few families had a stripper pole in the living room in the 50s.
Thanks for dropping her off this morning, by the way, Danny. Appreciate that.
He's a gentleman.
You're a stand-up guy.
You know,
I am.
I'm going to open up a business where we have like a series of tennis balls on a square item, and we're going to sell the Walker of Shame. Hey, I tried.
That was a good one.
The Walker.
That was a good one.
So, David, what other projects have you been working on, man? You're always doing something.
Yeah.
How did you even get into producing? You're one of those guys. You're like me. So do I. But you're like me. You've created your own work. And when did you make that decision? And how did that happen?
Well, I grew up just doing it. You know, we had the camcorder, me and my friends. I just found all this long lost footage. Actually, I want to digitize it. But me and my friends, just after school, I had the VHS and it was like, all right, let's make a movie. And we never like argued who was the director or what we were going to do. Someone would just go, we want to do Haunted House. Yeah. It was somehow we made a movie and we do it like in a day or two. We didn't know how to edit. It was all like linear, like in a row. Like, all right, now we got to go this room. We wouldn't know how the movie ended until we watched it at the end, you know, like, all right, let's see what we got. And hey, that's pretty good. Or, oh shit. And the thing with the camcorders, every, you say action, but it would like take like 3 seconds for it to actually go. And so like all the scenes were like, I start like in the middle of a sentence. You're like, son of a bitch. But anyways, so I just grew up doing it. I grew up doing everything, you know? And then I was sort of good at it, I guess, or I'm also acting, you do all this stuff and you will audition and you'll go and sometimes you never see the stuff or sometimes it's released and it's like bad. So it's like, you know, and this is my stuff. No, I'm just joking. this is the stuff I produce. No. I'll do whatever I can to make whatever I'm doing good, basically. Like I'll help, like I'll be an actor. If I'm just an actor on your film, I'll try to help. I'll be like, do you need XYZ? I can give you a location. I automatically go in the mentality of like, okay, we're all in this together. Let's make the best thing we can. I'll help. I'm good at connecting things and people. So if that helps make the project a better project, then I'm on board. You know, I just don't like responsibility. That's the one thing I don't like. But I like to connect people. But once, don't give me any responsibility, because then I get like sweaty up pits. You know, it's no fun.
Well, you've got a composer right next to you. Jesse's looking to do more of that stuff. So make sure you reconnect with him.
Yeah, David. If you got anything going on, or you got some reels, or even some footage, or even some scrap stuff that you're trying to put together, or even pitch, and you need some serious, intense, thematic scoring, like I'd love to. You send me some stuff. That'd be awesome. And you know, even if it's just a couple minutes or a couple scenes.
Thank you.
Stuff behind it, so you could check it out. Just throw it my way. Send it me via email. I'll throw it in Pro Tools and we'll put some scoring to it and send it back and be like, okay, now it's convincing. You know, once you get that theme music behind it, some big strings and some big brass behind it, it starts to get really convincing. Even if it's like not even, even if it's just mediocre, it's just like, just trying to test it out, you know, pre-pilot type stuff. You know what I mean? Like send it my way, because it's the only way I'm going to get more of my stuff out there as I'm getting further into my career, you know, you know, the young kids are not going to be coming to, you know, an old man in 25 years from now for hip hop beats, you know, anymore, or EDM. They're going to be, I'm going to, I want to, I want to be looking more at, you know, Danny Elfman and John Williams type of stuff at this point, you know. So,
oh, fine.
Anything, all right. Throw me a bone. That would be great.
All right. Am I? I swore. I'm assuming that's okay. Yeah. No. And you're a badass. I know you're a badass already. Last time I saw you, you guys just had a big, huge show. Where was that? I was on Sunset Strip. It was your last big Troubadour?
Right.
I saw you at the Troubadour.
We were the last show before a quarantine.
Yeah, you're about to go to Southwest, South by Southwest.
We actually did make it to South by Southwest.
Okay.
But that was like one of the last shows that we did big before South by Southwest. That actually somewhere along that timeline, but yeah.
No, and, I remember.
You know,
I was like,
they closed down. I'm glad they made it, man. I think a lot of people threw money at that Troubadour and all these other places. So yeah, it's been a crazy year. But congrats.
That was an awesome show.
Congrats on everything.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm still just doing my thing. And one more thing I'm doing, I have a kayak business up north, which is a completely different.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
You surprised me. I came back to LA and I see you got this kayak business. I'm like, what? How did you do this? Looks awesome.
That was from left field. That was a COVID choice. Like, I was up in the woods. I was up at a cabin, you know, everything shut down right after the Troubadour show. And I went up to a cabin up in Sonoma on the Russian River and I was going to buy a movie theater and I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that for the business loan or whatever. And then I stumbled across this land. I was just going to buy the land and build like our own movie theater on it or build like a music stage or something. And it came with a kayak business with it. I was like, oh, cool. Here's this land. And there's the kayak business. Well, you know, we could get rid of that if need be or whatever. But then I went to it and I was like, oh damn, this kayak business is, you guys make money. This is like good. I was like, I've heard about this thing, people making money. I don't know quite how it works. Show me. And they did. And I was like, oh, and shoot, this lady was retiring and I just stumbled across it at the right time. And we've been open. So this is our first summer that I'm the owner, but we're keeping the whole staff except for the owner. And they know what they're doing. I'm like, my wife calls me, coach, there's a show on, oh God damn it. Sorry, I'm swearing again. There's a show on Apple TV about a coach. It's an SNL guy and he goes to England and he becomes he's a football coach, but he goes to England and becomes a soccer coach, but he doesn't know anything. But it's a real funny show. It's a guy from SNL. And anyways, my wife calls me that because he's like, he doesn't know.
That was a Freudian, dude. That was a Freudian slip right there.
You didn't hear that.
Because your wife does become your mom in so many ways.
Is this show recorded?
it's even worse.
Danny, drop her off in the morning with Jesse's mom.
It's worse. It's live.
Logan, hey, my mom lost her Facebook. I'm stopping now. I'm blushing.
Hey, maybe it'll spark up. Maybe it'll spark up your sex life.
I think so. Hopefully. Awkward. Today's our anniversary too. Today, my wife and I. Today's my mom and I's anniversary.
It's on my birthday every year.
That's what I'm gonna call my birthday from now. No, it's my wife and I's real anniversary today.
Congratulations! How many years?
Happy anniversary, babe.
How many years have you been married?
12 years. 12 beautiful years.
Very nice.
We have an 8-year-old son named Jack, and he's an amazing kid. So
you always post about him.
I know.
I love your posts of things he says and asks questions he asks you and everything. How you answer.
I have one that you would like. I didn't post it because it's not, he did it with my wife. He's like, Mom, I hear funny sounds. And my wife goes, where is it coming from? He's like, my butt. I thought Danny, you would appreciate that one. I didn't post that one.
I always appreciate funny butt sounds. I really, I know. That's just. Yeah. I know, that's,
no, normally, yeah, he says something funny every day that I'll post. And I figure maybe someday I'll make like a coffee book or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
I remember when he was a baby and you used to, I remember when he was a baby and you used to do your shows at the Burbank Music Academy.
Oh, yeah.
Kids say the darndest things.
It's a long time ago.
There's a show.
Kids and Kevin.
That's a good show. That would be a good show.
I just repeat what my kids say. That's where I get my material.
How many kids do you
have? Well, that makes a lot of sense.
I have two. One boy and one girl.
Oh, very nice. I think I saw
them. Very talented kid.
Yeah.
No, you should have them on the show sometime, Kevin. Like a kids to work day.
The youngest is 16, so we better hurry.
Right?
Yeah.
So now you're what about the theater though? Are you doing, you got the Rio Theater? Is that something that's happening or?
Yeah, so that one is a little more work. That's gonna, but I had Ed Asner, speaking of Ed Asner, he came up and he helped do a promo. Basically that one, we need money, more money, of course, always money to make happen. But it's like this historic theater. It's on the Russian River. It's been around since the 1950s. It's all ready to go. Just needs a little love and care. But so we're going to do some fun things. We're going to have our own star of fame, maybe the Walker Hall of Fame, and have Ed Asner star there. So I might use your idea to help raise money. But yeah, it's a beautiful theater. I used to go there as a kid. And just want to get that open and running. And MonterioTheater.com, you could see a video we did and see Ed come up. And he's an amazing dude.
That's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Wow. That's it.
So that's cool, man. That's cool. Hopefully we're talking to my buddy Mark Maxey, who's working on my film. He's flying in June 1st. To talk to investors about my film. How do you find your investors for filmmakers out there? What kind of advice do you give for that kind of thing?
So say for Lockhart 2 right now, it's like the egg before the horse carriage. Just joking. Like you need the distribution to get the name. You need the name to get the distribution, to get the funding. It's like, you get served. I just want to film with Danny Trejo, American Sicario. I'm sort of doing the same thing with Lockhart too, is you get him to sign on and they'll do like a day rate, $10,000 to $20,000. You get him a real good part and you make it so you could shoot them in a day or two, but their part is they have to be in the movie for at least 15 minutes for you to be able to say that they have a starring role in it. So you strategize your day where they could be in multiple scenes, or unless you have lots of money and you could just have them really star in the film. But if this is a good way, if you get like $20,000, that's a good start. You know, you could get and I'm actually going to use Danny Trejo again, hopefully, that's my hope, and get him in the movie. But I did that with like Rock and Roll Zombie. I got like Eric Roberts. I got another guy who's pretty big, but he just went to jail, so I shouldn't say he's even in the movie anymore.
Danny Trejo actually shops at my CVS right here next to my – I live next to a CVS in my gated community in my townhomes. And I've ran into Danny Trejo at least three times because he's a resident of San Fernando Valley in Pacoima, San Fernando, some really, you know, kind of rough areas in the back streets over there. But he passes through. I've ran into him twice, got a hat on. It's a low pro, you know, kind of walking in, grabbing his personals and taking off. And I see him and I look at him and I just nodded, You know, I've seen him a couple times. I've seen him over that Trey Hill's. He's actually right here. Last in Sepulveda.
What personals? What personals does he pick up?
I mean, I didn't look, but I assume like, you know, I assume skin cream or something.
The important thing is that he goes to the register and pays for it, and he doesn't have to go to prison.
Yeah. I don't think some of these young kids behind the counter even recognize him at that point. They just don't even know. He's got a hat on. His hair's
hair's
tied up in a bun. He's wearing like a flannel. And just, you couldn't even, but I see, you look at his face, you're like, oh man, that's Danny right there. Okay.
Wow.
He's supposedly a really nice guy. I mean, he is a nice guy
he came from the ghetto. Like, this wasn't supposed to be. This wasn't supposed to be his story. I mean, he got out of jail and started getting movie roles. You know, he this wasn't supposed to be his story, but it is now. He's killing it. He's really killing it, and everyone loves him now. It's a blessing for him. And
I read that. I heard he was doing substance counseling on a film set,
he had a good run with him. He had his day. He had a good run. You know,
You were going to say he had a good run with some substances, and no, I was really rooting for that sentence.
I may have to work with him or score a film for him, and I'm not going to. I don't speak on his business, nor do I really know. But he had a good run, and you know, he did some time, and now he's killing the game, and it's just awesome. We're all glad to have him in the entertainment business. So, and that's cool.
How did you meet him, David?
Trejo, I just met him on the film. Someone had a connection with him on American Sicario. And they went through legitimate, ways, calling the agent, I guess, and said, hey, we have this money, you know, legit. It's in the account. And they got distribution. They got distribution before they even shot anything because Danny Trejo was in it. So this is my word of advice that I'm actually going to try myself. And I'm going to copy that. I always try to copy things that work. Sometimes I'm just too late. But this one, I'll say it before I do it because I think if it's not Danny Trejo, then it's just like, get somebody that if you get $20,000, just book it. Get it. Make it happen. And if some people will want to see the whole budget, but if you can just shoot a scene with somebody and just say they're in the film, then I think that's a good way.
It will help.
Yeah, totally.
It sounds clever.
So, how are we doing with Anthony? Kevin, I can't see my thing. Is Anthony almost ready, or what's going on here?
I think we're still a couple of minutes away, but I'm enjoying our guests now, and hopefully, they'll still have interesting stories until Anthony is prepared for his. See, if you're going to count on me to carry this show, we're all fucked.
Oh, shit.
No, Kevin, I can't do that.
I did the introduction when you had that technical glitch, and that was my whole... That was the only funny thing my kid said this morning. I got nothing else.
What is funny is that me and Danny are in separate parts of my studio. He's in a separate part, and I can slightly hear him. Upstairs.
Oh my god!
I'm in a soundproof studio in my recording studio, and he's in my graphic design office. But I can wow, there's a huge delay. But good thing I'm down here because that would have been a shit show.
That's so funny.
That's great.
My voice is the loudest voice. Even you know when I did telemarketing and stuff, I'm in the office and they'd be like they put me way in the back near the bathroom. So I'd be sitting there because my voice was so loud. You know what I mean? And so I'd have to sit there every time the bathroom door opened, I'd be like, ooh.
Yeah, well, you know, we all have things to work on, so.
He's in the green room.
Spotlight series on Charles Grodin.
Hello. How's everyone doing?
Yay!
You came just about a minute too late. About 45 seconds earlier would have saved us all a lot of embarrassment.
First off, great show, guys. Nice to meet you all. You. Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Anthony. What's up, buddy?
I just want to let you know this is this episode's sponsored by White Claw Surge.
Nice.
Danny, that's for you.
Nice.
And our co-sponsor, Truly.
Oh, nice. Oh, our nemesis. Actually, that Truly drinking is pretty good. Actually,
the lemonade. Is the lemonade. The,
yes, I was gonna say the lemonade. Yeah, 100%. In fact, a year ago we had a 4th of July party. Side story, and somebody left a bunch of Trulies, and I drank some of them. I wasn't feeling it. Whatever they're doing this year is working.
The lemonades.
Oh, it's great. Black cherry, pretty good. Yeah, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know how they get it to taste that way with one gram of sugar and like.
Yeah, that laboratory is on point for sure. Yeah.
Have you tried the iced tea? They've got an iced tea now. It's awesome.
Yes.
It's awesome. Hold on. It's awesome.
I'm on it.
The only problem is the White Claws make you burp so much.
I'm all right with that.
Yeah, it's like it's either choose burping.
I can handle that.
Beer belly. Choose burping or a beer belly. I'll take the burping.
Back in my day, we would just snort an 8-ball off of our hands in the bar, like men.
My day too, sir. That day was yesterday.
Which brings us to our next sponsor, 8-ball. No.
No, the next sponsor is somebody left some Miller High Lifes. I haven't had one of these in like 25 years. No, I'm on it.
I have one. I have two of those in my fridge right now. I cannot fucking get rid of them. I cannot get rid of everyone who comes over. I'm like, hey, man, you guys want a Miller High Life?
Yeah, that's a just in case.
You got to promise to turn it into a pipe and smoke out of it.
Negative. That's
maybe that'll move the product.
That's Alzheimer's.
All of my guests will not drink the Miller High Life. They're like, what's up with that last Truly? I'm like, that's mine.
Nice.
I'm like, dude, I got a cold Miller High Life. It's a champagne of beers, man. What's up? Grab it, dude. It's ice cold.
They're
like,
yeah.
I'll just have some cranberry juice.
Hold on. I got one of Danny's burps coming. It's stuck. Excuse me. The show's clearly off the rails.
Yes, it is. Yes.
By the way,
that has happened.
Mr. David Lockhart, I totally related to what you were talking about. My friends and I used to shoot shit all the time in a day or two. And I always try to take the directing responsibilities, but we would share it kind of equally too. You know, like if the idea was cool, we would just go for it. So
yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
I try to implement that in today's films. Doesn't always fly. Someone wants to know who the director is.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah.
There needs to be a leader for sure on a production. Yeah. All right. So I don't want to, you know, deviate too much, but that was our deviation. Spotlight on Charles Grodin, but we're going to do a tiny spotlight. We're just going to show kind of the starter pack of Charles Grodin because he passed away last week.
Unfortunately.
Okay? Yeah. So he was born April 21st, 1935. And he passed away last week, as I said. So again, starter pack of films. I actually in preparation because, you know, when somebody passes, I want to do a bit about their life and especially their work. And I try to watch or consume as much as I can. But with two kids, another on the way, and full-time work, a little tricky. So some of these titles that are coming up, I haven't seen in probably 20, 25 years. Heads up. But we're just going to get right into it. The Heartbreak Kid, in my opinion, is probably one of his best fucking movies ever. I don't know if you've seen it, but there was a remake with Ben Stiller by the Farrelly brothers, which is actually pretty good. But anybody remember this one or have seen the remake?
The original.
I saw the remake.
Classic film.
Unfortunately, yeah. I missed this one.
It's worth checking out. It's totally on YouTube, the whole movie.
I definitely will. I will check it out after Pornhub tonight.
Right on. But then again, I mean.
No, you got to do Pornhub at the end of the night.
Yeah, because you're going to go to sleep.
You're right.
What are you talking about? You're on Pornhub right now.
He's got two monitors. He's got two monitors.
This format does lend itself to different activities in the upper half and the lower half.
He's a multitasker.
Thank you.
But for those that don't know the background of this, basically Charles Grodin, he gets married to this woman because they have to have sex after marriage because she's virtuous, and she becomes a different woman. After, and they go on their honeymoon, and she's just completely like fucking nuts. And also, he's got a touch of grass is always greener almost immediately. Like, once he conquers the woman, he's like out of there. So, he meets Sybil Shepherd, a very young Sybil Shepherd. This is pre Taxi Driver. Okay.
Wow. Sybil Shepherd.
Yeah. So she's super young. And she's hilarious. Well, she's not hilarious, but she's, I want to say she steals the show. But it's definitely Charles Grodin's picture. And I think it's cool to watch him as like, it's literally resting on his shoulders the entire movie. And he just bullshits his way out of this scene and that scene. And I can't recommend it enough. And I think Ben Stiller in the remake actually did a really like killer homage to the movie. So I would say watch this one on YouTube or whatever the fuck. I don't think Amazon's even streaming this. And then check out the Stiller one moving forward.
There you go.
Seems like old times. Anybody? Chevy Chase, Goldie Hawn.
Love it. Which is amazing.
Seems like old times.
Yeah. This one's solid. This is post Foul Play with Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn. It's really kind of, you know, I don't want to say their movie, but basically Goldie Hawn is married to Charles Grodin in this picture, and her ex-husband, Chevy Chase, was forced to rob a bank, and he takes refuge with them in their house. Comedy ensues. The end. Moving forward. Check it out. I'm going to try to get through this
quick. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. This one is one I watched all the time as a kid. And it's really Lily Tomlin's movie, but The Incredible Shrinking Woman. Anybody?
Yes.
Incredible. I saw it like
50 times.
Yeah.
Showtime.
I loved it. Hysterical.
Right there. Yeah, nice. And it's cool because they have like a lot of, you know, camera trickery as she's getting smaller and smaller. And as evidenced in The Heartbreak Kid, his kind of think quick on his feet kind of acting, but also underacting. But also hysterical acting. He's almost the Diane Keaton of hysterical actors. Like, nobody does hysteria better than Diane Keaton. And I think Charles Grodin is like the counterpart to that. But yeah, he plays her husband, and he's an ad. He works for an ad agency, and she ends up getting with one of the products shrunk. But check it out. The end. Moving forward. Yeah. So this one I haven't seen in years, probably 15 years, but I remember basically the lonely guy, as you can see. Steve Martin is a lonely guy, and in New York City, there's a bunch of lonely guys, as I recall. And I think that what happens, Steve Martin ends up, I think he writes a column or something about lonely guys, and he gets, you know, pretty famous, like Playboy Magazine, so on and so forth. But what steals the show is he before his fame, he has meetings in Central Park with Charles Grodin, like, daily. And the shit they talk about is fucking golden. This is Seinfeld before Seinfeld. This is mundane conversations. This is talking about how, because Charles Grodin has thinning hair, and they're talking about a haircut and how, you know, Michael Landon, for example, should be charged $400. But he's not. And Charles Grodin, who has less hair, is charged more. And then they talk about how bums have a full head of hair. And it just goes on and on and on. If anything, watch it for those sequences. So. Anybody remember this movie at all? We're going to start getting into very familiar Charles Grodin territory. But
yeah, it is a rarity. I never even heard of this movie. I don't recall.
Really? It's so good.
I know. I'm surprised, but.
Yeah, he's more supporting for sure. He's got a total story arc, but it's clearly Steve Martin's picture.
Anthony, you mind if I just chime in for a
second? Please. Yeah, I feel like I'm oral reporting.
What is going on behind you right there?
Let's remove this if we can. Killer. So I'm in my basement.
What is going on back there?
So I grew up in LA, the Valley, and we didn't have basements. And once we moved to North Atlanta, I'm like, holy fuck, we got a basement. I'm not going to squander it. So I built a 80s video store, all VHS.
Fuck yes.
Yeah. And
that's how you get bitches right there.
Yeah. If only my wife swung. No. So I got an adults only section. The light's not on there. Man. Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's real big box tapes in there.
That and is badass.
Dude. It branches off into other rooms that are all VHS.
I didn't mean to break you off, but I just I couldn't.
That is awesome.
I can't tell if they're records, DVDs, CDs, Blu-rays. I can't even tell. But
I have laser discs in the that room.
I actually have laser discs on my wall in my studio just for ambiance, because they look like big CDs.
Oh yeah.
And I get the 15-year-old kids in here, the rappers, and they're like, "What is this on your wall?" I'm like, "Oh, that's cute."
They're like, "It's a Grammy." You know, this is because I sold a million units. Yeah, you know, like looks like
Anyway, so, moving on.
No. All right, so the next movie, I have to throw this on. Okay, the best thing about this movie is the poster.
Agreed.
This is probably the biggest stain on his career, whether he enjoyed making it or not. It's a horrible train wreck. It is the worst of the worst. I will happily never watch this movie again as long as I live.
Wow.
And I've seen it probably three times, sadly. The last time was for research. Last resort. He's overstressed. He lives in Chicago, I believe, and they go to this Club Sands, which I believe is mistakenly a sex resort. And so he takes his family there. again, I mean, this is no Exit to Eden. Not that that's a good movie, but at least that movie has moments as bad as it is. But yeah, Last Resort, it looks like it was shot on the backside of like Catalina Island and not like the good side at all. It looks like it was made for $7 with no charm. And I can't tell you enough how shitty this movie is. It's so bad.
The poster looks so good though. That's the poster.
It's enticing. That poster is enticing.
Yeah, when I was nine, I vividly remember opening the newspaper, and that was a very important piece for me as a kid. Was that? Yeah, that ad was. I clipped it out. So, yeah.
Somewhere, a kid needed an extra minute or two before he could get up.
Oh yeah,
he was looking at that poster. Get the family out in the car. I'll be out there in a few minutes. Leave me alone.
Yeah, it's almost like Donna Dixon vibes right there.
Aside from the fact that she lost her hips in the war.
She did, I know. But when you're nine, see, I was all about like, doesn't matter at the time. Okay, moving forward. So terrible film. Fucking awful, terrible fucking film. But I have to give one shout out to its new Concord, which was Corman Company. So Julie Corman, Roger Corman's, I believe, daughter, produced it. And they were producing content for VHS home video, but it actually got released in theaters. But again, avoid the film. It's not even a movie to fold laundry and watch to. It's so bad. Like, gift it to somebody you really don't like.
An enemy. Okay? Yeah.
So if you find out you have 2 hours to live, watch the movie. It'll seem like six.
Yeah.
What he's saying is don't even wish that on your enemy.
Or if you have to watch torture someone.
If you're interested in Charles Grodin's body of work, check it out. And don't even clean. I don't know what the fuck to do. Just avoid it. Just don't watch it. Watch a trailer.
Sniff glue. While you're sniffing glue, put on the movie.
Let's get past, because I don't want to hijack everybody. So The Couch Trip I haven't seen in years, but beyond that, I'm definitely, you know, up to reviews. So The Couch Trip is kind of this is really Dan Aykroyd's movie. It's kind of like the lonely guy in that Steve Martin's. It's his film, but this is like kind of like Taking Care of Business in that there's like identity swap. Dan Aykroyd swaps the identity of Charles Grodin. And Walter Matthau understands he's a con man, so he gets in on the game, if I recall correctly. And it's got moments. But, you know, I'll probably throw it in the old in-store telly in the next, you know, week or so. But I haven't seen this in years. But it's Charles Grodin's body of work. I wanted to throw that out there. I do recall that when Dan Aykroyd's not on screen, the movie lags a bit. Moving forward. Everybody's seen this one, and if you haven't, you've heard of it.
Yeah.
Midnight Run.
Amazing.
Classic.
Yes. Any thoughts, gentlemen? Any thoughts?
That was De Niro's first comedy, wasn't it? That was De Niro's first comedy,
I mean, he played the straight guy, but yes, I think you're correct.
I think that was the first time he ever did a comedy. What was that?
He should have stopped with
what
that.
What was that,
Jesse? He should stop. Well, from Last Resort to Midnight Run. Now, heads up. If I recall correctly, Last Resort was 86. So Couch Trip was 88, and this movie was 88. So he was outputting some stuff. But Midnight Run, De Niro's a bounty hunter, basically. And he takes in Charles Grodin, who's embezzled money, I believe, from a mob, if I recall correctly. And I think he gave it away. But regardless, there's a fat bounty, and De Niro's going to take him in because he wants it. This is like almost like a retirement job. And it's like almost Planes, Trains, and Automobiles after Planes, Trains, and Automobiles since it's 88. But it's definitely no comparison, but there's similarities to it in that they're, you know, he's trying to get them across, you know, the nation. It's pretty fucking good, yeah. You know, and yeah. Charles Grodin super shines. I think he almost harkens back to the Heartbreak Kid, not as a, you know, fast talking used car salesman, but kind of like that. I don't know. There's a bit of a charm. I don't know. So has everybody seen this? I know that David has.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
100.
And yep. Jesse is getting another Truly.
And I think the key to a film like this really is somebody with Grodin's sensibilities or how he plays things, understated, can carry it but can't move it as well. Someone else has to move the action, in my opinion, because it's difficult for someone that understated to do that. And I think that's what makes the movie work in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a bit of The Odd Couple, you know. Mm-hmm. You got two different personalities. Yeah. And it's funny, there's a moment, if I recall, where De Niro is talking with Grodin, and he's like, here we are, or maybe vice versa, here we are talking like a couple of fellas. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is almost like the scene from Heat, you know, years later.
Yeah.
Here we are talking like a couple of guys, you know, we could be homies. However, we've got this business to handle that separates us. But anyway, hell of a piece of work by Grodin and De Niro. I totally recommend it at the end. Probably the highlight of his career.
Agreed.
In my opinion.
No, agreed.
This next one's a huge favorite of mine. I've brought this up numerous times. Taking Care of Business. Anybody?
And I love that movie.
Mr. Lockhart, you got to get on this. And this is not a folding laundry movie. This is a get your favorite drink or a cup of tea or whatever the hell and relax and enjoy it. It's definitely a timestamp from 1990. But Jim Belushi escapes prison to go because he wins tickets on the radio to go see the Cubs win the World Series. So he, you know, escapes prison and it's a mistaken identity kind of thing. It's an identity theft movie. He gets ad exec Charles Grodin's Filofax organizer and takes his identity. And basically it's like, you know, Charles Grodin goes here. James Belushi takes his life, as I said, and he's rags to riches, dude. He's living large, okay? And I like this movie so much. I don't know if you can see it, but I got a spinning mobile up there.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a fake little vacation shout out, but
yeah.
So, yeah, it's super, like, whoever wrote this script, actually, J.J. Abrams co-wrote this script.
Wow. Did he really?
He did, yeah. I believe he's credited as Jeffrey Abrams.
Wow.
Yeah. Totally almost wrote it for Charles Grodin because it's like, you know, it's that hysteria again. You know, like you're going to just watch him just get in this situation and that situation and just kind of scream his way out of it. But it's not annoying. It's pretty funny. But it's really
– Belushi's hysterical.
It's Belushi's picture. Yeah.
He's incredible.
Yeah, and it's funny because I did see a interview with Grodin where he was saying it was one of the funnest sets – he had ever worked on. And when Grodin passed, Belushi did an Instagram post saying it was literally the most exciting and fun set he had ever worked on. And so it really just shines through in terms of chemistry. Like everyone's having fun in this movie. There's really not a mean bone in its body, even though he's a car thief who stole somebody's identity and is living their life and is, you know, it's awesome. So check it out. 4 stars, moving forward.
Bah, bah, bah.
Yeah, I went here. I fucking went here, gentlemen. Sponsored by
Dude, I just met Beethoven the dog. I was out the other night at Michael's restaurant. That's a shout out to my buddy's restaurant. And this giant St. Bernard comes in, giant. And you would have thought Brad Pitt came in, the whole restaurant. It was outside area, but everybody's like, oh my God, gasping.
I got to be honest, if Brad Pitt came in, people would be like this.
Right.
But if a St. Bernard comes in, like, what's up?
Here's the crazy thing. Here's the crazy thing. It was Beethoven's grandson. This dog was related to this dog in this movie.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be my anxiety dog. I mean, that's a way to pick up women. Sorry. Hey,
but
remember Beethoven?
Crazy is that?
Like, remember Beethoven's fifth? Because he made like 100 of these.
If you want her to be a fun woman, you keep the barrel of scotch underneath the dog's neck.
I would like to bring Susanna in for the segment if possible.
It's either that or Beethoven's dog or a fucking 80s video store in your basement. That's how you get
there. Oh, right. Nice. Right on, brother. Dude, I should give you the fucking full tour, dude, after this. If you're going to hang out for the after party, I'll totally give you the full tour.
I'm going to fly out there and come check this shit out. Would you be mad if I did a 90s one, a 90s video store in my studio?
No, not at all, bro. Dude, I was inspired by another person who actually, long story short, well, I should tell you this in the after party. But yeah, I was inspired by somebody else, and I've been working on this for about 3.5 years. It's my lady calls it one more thing video because I'm nice. Literally always adding to it. It's
of course,
problem.
You have to. 80s never ends. 80s never ends.
I can't believe I just met the grandson of this, and you're putting it on. I didn't know you were going to bring this on. That's amazing.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, the grandson.
Two nights ago, I met him. Two nights ago.
Oh, that's badass. Well, Susanna, let's talk about this, dude. And I got some good shit to say about Beethoven. It's actually, it gets clowned, which I actually don't understand, but go for it.
So this is my favorite Charles Grodin movie because he plays the quintessential dad who hates every dog, you know, like, anyway, so my mom, we watched this so many times. My mom went out and got St. Bernard and she named him Beethoven.
Oh, that's great.
And then... So we moved and we had to give that one away and she got another one. She named that one Beethoven too.
Wow.
Beethoven second?
The second. Yeah.
Beethoven Jr.?
Yeah.
It was funny. Yeah. Really mean dog. Really mean. Yeah.
So has anyone seen this movie? I know it's written off very easily.
Love it.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. So this was written by Edmond Dantès. And I covered this in another segment.
John Hughes.
It's a pen name for John Hughes. John Hughes wrote this story.
Right.
And screenplay, as a matter of fact. For whatever reason, he took his name off it. And probably because he wasn't satisfied with, you know, the executive decisions on how it turned out or this and this and that. Whatever the fuck. Or it was just a hired gun. But at the end of the day, it's kind of a fun fucking movie. It's shot very well by Brian Levant. And Charles Grodin is they realize exactly who they needed for this role. It's basically the counterpart, as I said, of Diane Keaton, Charles Grodin. Somebody to get fucking hysterical because a dog is on the bed fucking after it's been just molesting itself in mud. So it's basically if you want to watch, and I hate to say this because he has just passed. If you want to watch Charles Grodin get a heart attack every 5 minutes, you watch this movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, again, I can't recommend it enough. It's super fun. Not a mean bone in its body. The end. Moving forward. And they made two. He was in two of these, I believe. Yeah. This one's fun, too. It's no one, but it's enjoyable. Moving forward. This one's fucked up. This one's fucked up. This one's weird.
Not Clifford, man.
This one's weird. No. There's nothing wrong with this movie, but everything wrong with this movie.
Not my dog.
Okay, so what's interesting about Clifford is if you replaced Martin Short with an actual 10-year-old boy, it'd be a horror movie. Okay? And it almost is because he ain't convincing as a 10-year-old kid. It's like you're 35, bro. Okay, like
right.
But there's something interesting about this movie and something not cool about it at the same time. Okay. So if you're folding laundry, this is your folding laundry film right here. And again, if you want to watch Charles Grodin have a heart attack 700 times, because he knew what he was signing up for. He's like, oh yeah, I need to freak out every 5 minutes. All right. I'm your guy. Cool. Anyway, Charles Grodin went on to do several other pictures, drama pictures as well, TV, this and that. He was also a political commentator on, news segments here and there. But, yeah, I just want to, you know, spotlight his body of work real quick in case anybody wanted to, you know, rent one or buy something on, you know, Amazon to give a little shout-out to Grodin. But I can't recommend enough Midnight Run, Midnight Train with John Voight is pretty good. Midnight Run, Taking Care of Business is great. Pay Tough, it's fun. Lonely Guy, Heartbreak Kid, Heartbreak Kid. The end.
Nice.
Thank you for
awesome. Letting me go. Nice job, man.
God bless. I always feel like it's an oral report when I do this spotlight series. Like, oh, hey, in front of the class.
Yeah. I'm going to definitely watch some of those. Thank you.
Heartbreak Kid's badass, dude. Again, it's on YouTube streaming free. Just hang out. It's just fun. Yeah.
I Charles Grodin had a talk show for a short period of time, and I was on the street in New York, and they said I could ask a question. They had, you know, they were asking, getting people on the street to ask questions, and I was the one of the questions he chose.
And I wonder if it's on YouTube.
Huh?
I wonder if it's on YouTube.
It might be. It might
be. Chase shows on YouTube.
Yeah, I asked him something about being an actor, and he actually answered the question on the show that night. So nice. I was a huge fan of his.
Oh, cool. And, so the last time you saw it, was it live? Like when it aired, when the show aired, was the last time you saw it?
Yeah.
Wow. How long ago do you think that was?
Oh, man, I was young. I was
90s?
I don't want to tell anybody how old I am.
We were born in 94 or pre other segments. You said you were born when Speed came out.
No, I didn't. Oh, right.
Yeah, you did.
Is that come a good
on, man.
Age?
I'm Rain Man with years, bro. Come on.
Listen, everybody right, that was so born the year you were born is tied with you by being
he's got,
alive.
He's got,
there's
he's
nothing
got
wrong
Jesus
with being your age.
In his yearbook.
Mel Brooks would appreciate that joke.
Anthony, thank you. Thank you, Susanna, Kevin. Thank you, Jesse. And thank you, David. Those of you who are watching, please share this with your friends. The Danny McDermott Show, we're on 11 different platforms, including Spotify and iTunes. If you don't have time to watch the video on Facebook or YouTube, on the bottom, you can see we're going to be running this a lot more now. It's the way you can donate to the show. Which just passed, so I can't read it right now.
anchor.fm/the Danny McDermott Show/support. Please
thank you,
Kevin.
Avoid this movie.
Avoid that movie.
By the way, thank you so much. By the way,
Lockhart's green screen
is phenomenal. I like it.
We will see you next time. Guys, hang out for the after party. We will see you next time, guys. Thank you.
There you go. Good night. Thank you for watching.
Good night, guys. Good night.
Nope.
Hey guys, this is Danny McDermott from the Danny McDermott Show. If you want to see our show live, it's every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Trust me, you want to see it then. You'll see all the screw-ups. It's great. Our show is an adult show, I must admit, but that's only because we're childish. Most of the guests that we have on the show are my friends, so you can just watch us hang out as buddies. It's fun. Just chill, relax, enjoy.